Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. I bet you get 30, 30, I bet you get 30, I bet you get 20, 20, 20, I bet you get 20, 20, I bet you get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month, sold.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
With LinkedIn Jobs, we tap into a network of more than a billion professionals to help you find quality professionals quickly and easily for any role you need. Marketing wizards? Found them.
Software engineers?
Found.
That project manager I could never seem to hire?
And found. LinkedIn Jobs quickly matches your roles with candidates with the right skills and experience. In fact, 86% of small businesses get a qualified candidate within 24 hours. Post your first job for free and get started at linkedin.com/spoken. That's linkedin.com/spoken. Terms and conditions apply.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedy-ad-free. That's amazon.com/comedy-ad-free to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
I'm Kate Thornton. Join me every week on White Wine Question Time, the podcast that asks famous faces three thought-provoking questions over three glasses of wine.
It's very rare to be introduced with such a thorough introduction, and it's kind of lovely to listen to all that and go, yeah, I've had a good life, right?
You really have.
How did you find that?
I can't even remember. Yeah.
You do your research, Kate, man. I'll tell you that.
Do you know what? You are the only person ever, no other journalist has ever made that connection.
Wow, what a great question.
And receives some truly memorable answers.
And Tom Cruise came and Nicole Kidman. I go to him, listen, before you go, Tom, I just want you to know, if you fancy a foursome, I'm up for it, and I know Anne-Marie doesn't mind.
When I first dated my now husband, I joined a gym for, I'm going to say, £1,000 a year, just so I could go off and have a poo.
Actually, I got heckled once in Wales, and there was a bloke at the bar on crutches, and he actually said to me, I'd rather fall over than listen to this shit, and he threw his crutches at me and fell over. Can you believe that?
I've got some cat's ashes, I don't know who they are.
You've been catfished by your own cat.
Exactly, seriously, man.
Dad, have you thought about putting in a breakfast nook? And my dad would think of that. Have you thought about getting your own fucking out?
How did you give a duck an orgasm, Craig?
It's good with them, you know.
I know my way around a duck.
So, if you fancy a sit-down with the likes of Adam Hills, Tom Allen, Hannah Waddingham, Phil Tufnell, James Acaster and Ed Gamble, Daisy May Cooper, and tons more, then join me every Tuesday and Friday. Search White Wine Question Time in your podcast app to subscribe and listen now. White Wine Question Time is a Stack production.
I'm Andy Brassel, she's Jules Breach, and this is Jules and Andy on Football Ramble Daily.
What an outstanding performance by Watford from a club in their position. I've got to say that first. And what another underwhelming day for Tottenham Hotspur. I've got to say that second.
Coming up, we'll be talking about Tottenham's current struggles and some very strange goings-on in North London. We'll also be looking at Jules' unique perspective on some upsetting events at Haringey Borough in the FA Cup this weekend. That's all coming up on Jules and Andy. Hey Jules, how was your weekend?
It was another really busy football weekend, wasn't it? I feel like so much has happened this weekend, so there's loads for us to talk about. You were actually at the Tottenham game on Saturday, weren't you?
I was. As we'll come on to in a minute, they weren't very good. I mean, the stadium's magnificent. It's my first visit there, and I've passed it loads of times. I've done work outside it, next to it, but it was my first time actually in it. Without getting all Kevin McLeod, I like the sense of light.
Oh, okay.
It's very nice. Like when you're in the bit before you actually go into the stand and go into your seat, you get an incredible view over London. It's a bit like when you play pitch and putt at Ali Pally.
You told me about this before and I never got the chance to do it when I went to see Ramble Live there.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, it's well worth it at some point anyway.
But you actually had quite a fancy experience because you had some hospitality type tickets, didn't you?
I might have done.
You are such a football snob. Tell me about the food.
It was good. I had a pulled pork bap. No Ooh, prawns.
Nice.
No prawns. Keeping it real.
Okay.
Just because prawns weren't on the menu, obviously. But yeah, I did sit in the park lane end, the big wall.
Which what was that experience
like? It was a really great experience. I think we got there early when it just opened, and when it's empty, you get an idea of the scale of it. It's absolutely extraordinary. It really is something special. And, you know, you get the impression that you can see well from wherever you are in the stadium. There's nothing that looks tucked away. And, you know, that's one of the things I've always liked about the new Wembley, actually. I know some people say the magic has gone out of Wembley because you don't have the Twin Towers anymore and all that sort of stuff. I remember old Wembley. It was uncomfortable. There weren't any backs on the seats. It was difficult to get to. The stands were miles away from the pitch. And now Wembley is, whatever you think of the spend on the construction and all the rest of it, it is a big stadium where you can see well from anywhere, which I think is important.
When I've worked pitch side at the Tottenham Hotspur Stadium and I've looked up at that wall, I've always thought it looks really steep. And that from a fan's perspective, if you're sat there fairly near the top end, would it feel quite steep looking down? How far up were you?
You know what? For me, the ultimate in steep is the away end, the old away end at Goodison Park in the 90s. That you could feel quite vertiginous
if really
if you leant forward, but I don't want to think about that because it makes me feel sick.
But yeah, a good experience in terms of the whole day out at Tottenham, but in terms of Spurs' performance, well, it did lack a lot, didn't it?
Yeah, it really did. And I know there's been a lot of discussion about what's been going wrong with Spurs recently. A lot of it's confidence. I think you have to say that. And it was interesting, of course, Watford's still yet to win this season. And it's a strange feeling going to see a game where you think both sides are there for the taking, probably from opposition that are in better nick at the moment. But yeah, Spurs have got a problem. And what I thought was interesting is obviously Dele Alli came in for his first start of the season and got a goal. But me and my friend who I went with, who's I've known since we were kids and is a big Tottenham fan, we were discussing in the first half where Spurs were really struggling to make anything happen, and it seemed like Toby Alderweireld was getting the ball every 2 minutes. When does it get to the point where you decide you're going to sell Dele Alli? I know, like, Phil Neville on Match of the Day did a piece this weekend about how he thought Dele Alli was coming back to his best and how well he thought he'd played. From speaking to people who watch Tottenham a lot, that's the best he's played in a long time. I still didn't think he played that well, to be honest. And I feel part of that is he's a bit set to fail in the current system. He's left there drifting behind Harry Kane. And when you think, when Dele Alli first came in to the Tottenham team, what so impressed me about him is the fact that he was playing in front, in the two in front of the defence. And I think for a teenager to come to the Premier League from the third tier and to look good in that position straight away, that really convinced me about him as an all-round footballer. I felt convinced straight away in a way that you don't often feel. You can say young players have promise and not get carried away, but straight away he looked like the real deal. And I don't really feel he's come that far forward since then. And maybe if he had a role where I felt like he had more designated responsibility in the team, that would make a difference. I know it's difficult to talk about carving out that role for him when it's only really the start of his season now. But I do think, you know, you look at the other players in the Tottenham squad and, you know, you think they might be on the brink of some sort of big squad turnover. I mean, he's one of the most saleable ones. He hasn't got a contract that's running out. He's rated everywhere, all over the world. I wonder if you want to actually generate funds to rebuild that squad, and we all understand they haven't got like 400, 500 million to spend, do you sell him?
Well, it's been spoken about for what feels like a few seasons now, potentially moving Dele Alli on. And I agree with you on Saturday. He looked lacking in confidence, lacking in a bit of match fitness and sharpness.
I mean, that's to be expected, of course.
Yeah, of course. He'd only played half an hour's worth of Premier League football until the game against Watford. So you would expect that to be the case. And I do think he improved as the match went on, particularly once Maurizio Pochettino introduced Son into the team.
And when Lamella was going around kicking people on his behalf.
I think that definitely helped Dele Alli as the match progressed. But yeah, I don't think it was a great performance overall from him or for the whole Tottenham team. And actually, I was really disappointed in Spurs on Saturday, because leading into the match, it felt like they were the team that desperately needed the international break. They could go away having lost that match against Brighton last time out. And obviously there was the 7-2 defeat before that to Bayern Munich in the Champions League. And it felt like they really needed that international break to just regroup, have a bit of time away from the spotlight, go off on international duty if that's what they were doing, and then come back for this game against the team bottom of the table, put in a convincing performance, get 3 points on the board and kind of get back to what we're so used to seeing with Tottenham. And even Maurizio Pochettino in his press conference during the week before the game, he was what I thought was surprisingly upbeat. He came in all smiles. He was joking around with the press and he said, I'm not worried about my position here. The players have invited me out for dinner. Everything seemed quite rosy and quite positive. So I was expecting to see that positivity translate onto the pitch on Saturday. 7 changes that he made to the team as well. I was expecting to see a lot more from Tottenham, and it just felt like we were exactly where we were 2 weeks ago.
I mean, it's a big part of it. Like, there's no Christian Eriksen. I mean, you know, like you say, they're back to where they were, not just a couple of weeks ago, but you could say at the start of the season, in that very first game against Villa, until Eriksen came on and Villa started to tire a bit, they were banging their heads against a brick wall. And I don't think, say, the first 60 minutes of that performance against Villa on the first day of the season, a game that they actually ended up winning, it's really that much different to the content of this Watford game. And that, to me, hints at a greater problem. The fact that this is a team that needs freshness, that needs to be evolved. Now, part of that will come through Ndombele settling more and carving out his place in the team. Part of that will come from when Lo Celso's fit and he's ready to play. Because obviously, when you go out and spend that amount of money for a player, or potentially that amount of money for a player, and they're not ready to play, that's a real blow. And I do kind of feel as if it's the last few years really coming home to roost, because like there's nothing that wrong with the last transfer window. Of course, they would have liked to get Paulo Dybala, but it's not about the last transfer window, is it? It's about the ones before that. And that summer transfer window on its own is fine, but it's just not enough after what's gone before.
It almost feels like there's been a delayed reaction to those two windows when Pochettino wasn't able to buy any players and he didn't bring anyone in, and they survived that and did very well despite bringing anyone new into the squad. And everyone was kind of praising him and saying, wow, look what Maurizio Pochettino has done with the team that he's got and the players that he's got there. And then it now feels like we're now seeing the effects of it. We're now seeing that there's obviously some problems and that perhaps certain players should have moved on and should have taken moves when they were offered. And maybe the club should have sold certain players. But I agree with you. It does almost feel like there's this delayed effect and it's now hit them.
I think why we feel it so much, it's kind of the reverse of what's happening with Chelsea, because Chelsea have had this whole image revamp this season because we don't think of them bringing young players into the first team. And it's just a lovely surprise for everyone, really, isn't it? The fact that Chelsea are just the opposite of what they've been in many previous seasons, and people are reacting really well to that, the youth and the spontaneity of it all. But with Tottenham, we're used to them being zesty and punchy and exciting. And they just feel so flat at the moment. That is a problem. I do think that cutting edge in midfield is going to make a difference. And I do think if Lo Celso can settle quickly, that can change the course of their season. I really do, because I've seen a lot of him at Betis, and I really like him as a player. Funnily enough, like Dele Alli, when he was at Paris Saint-Germain, he was kind of forced into a central, sort of more defensive midfield role, which is something that, well, he arrived as a number 10 in Europe. I don't think it's something he was massively suited to, but he made a good job of it. And you could see his technical quality. And I think that's kind of toughened him up and will make him more amenable to settling quickly. And Tottenham have definitely got a... hope that can be the case because, they've got a few issues at the moment.
Yeah, we're used to seeing Maurizio Pochettino's sides play with quite a lot of courage and positivity going forward.
Courage is a good word.
That kind of was missing on Saturday, and I think it has been missing for a few weeks now. It's three games without a win in all competitions since they beat Southampton in the Premier League a few weeks ago now.
And that was like pulling teeth as well, wasn't it?
And that wasn't a great performance. Yeah. But now, when we look ahead, it is a huge week for Tottenham. They drop points at home to Watford, a team that they should be beating and who they actually could have lost to in the end. And we'll get on to the Dele Alli handball VAR moment in a moment. Mm. But they face Red Star in the Champions League tonight, and then they travel to Anfield in the Premier League at the weekend. Those are two massive games. They need to win in the Champions League tonight. And they're facing off, I mean, Liverpool off the back of dropping points at Old Trafford, perhaps not the best time to play them either.
Are you basically saying they could do without getting hammered at Anfield?
They could do without both of these games because it's a big week for the Tottenham players to kind of up their game now. They need a win in the Champions League and they need to not get badly put away by Liverpool.
All I would say is, are we looking at it the wrong way round almost? Because you said there that they haven't won in the last three games. And that's right, of course, but if we go further and further back, I think the last time I saw Tottenham play in the flesh was against Watford last season. And it was a cold night near the end of January. Wembley had about 30,000 people in it. I think by that point, a lot of Tottenham fans were like, I'm done with Wembley. Just bring the new stadium on already. And I can understand that. But they were not great in that. They went a goal down in the first half. And they just dug in and found a way to chisel out a win without playing particularly well, just like they chiseled out a draw at the weekend. And it makes you think, actually, whereas the Champions League final in 2018 was a springboard for Liverpool and they managed to go on and eliminate the weaknesses they had in the team, it's not really the same for Spurs, is it? And it's not just that they haven't had the mega transfer window that would have, you know, obliterated all the holes in the squad. It's the fact that, you know, looking back on it, and of course getting to the Champions League final is a great thing, but has it covered up a load of issues? On the other hand, well, Watford stuck at it really, really well, I think. That they did a pretty good job of that. And I think an interesting thing for me is watching it at the time at the stadium, I had the feeling that Toby Alderweireld was getting the ball all the time because Watford were happy to let him have it. And I think that shows the way that Watford, without having the ball, were able to dictate the game because, you know, he's the defender who's not dreadful on the ball, but he's the least good Tottenham defender on the ball, you would say. And I look back and he had 131 touches.
Wow.
Like way more than anyone else in the game. I think the other nearest one, like Vertonghen, was about 113, 114, something like that. So the way they managed to, without knocking themselves out by pressing super high, in fact, they never pressed Alderweireld at all. They let him have the ball because they thought, well, if he tries the long ball over the top, then we've got that covered because we're pretty deep. And otherwise, what's he going to do? Pass it sideways. Mm. And they're miles away from goal anyway. So I think you have to really compliment Flores and Watford for that.
And they were unfortunate, in my opinion, because I think they should have had a penalty. And this brings us on to VAR, because it was one of those moments where when you watch it back, and I had the benefit of being in the studio, so I could see from all sorts of different camera angles that we were being shown at BT Sport.
We're talking about Vertonghen on Deulofeu.
Correct.
Yeah.
That was, for me, a stonewall penalty. And I don't understand how the angles I was told by Peter Walton, who was the referee we had in the studio, that the angle we were seeing wasn't the one that the VAR was seeing. I don't know how he knew that, but he obviously must have known for some reason that he was seeing a different angle to what the VAR was seeing. I think that is wrong. I think that the VAR at Stockley Park should be given every single angle that every TV camera is showing. And I think if you see that angle that we saw, it is a foul. It's a foul in the box and it should have been a penalty. And if that is given and Watford go 2-0 up, that completely changes the game.
Yeah, absolutely. And it possibly changes the future of both those clubs, certainly in the medium term.
And that's what VAR is meant to be there for, to prevent teams getting relegated because of bad decisions, to, you know, make sure that we're getting the correct decisions made. And this was another occasion where I think that was a mistake. Peter Walton said himself that he thinks that this will be one when it's reviewed, that the Premier League will hold their hands up and say we made a mistake with that one.
What good is that, though?
It's not any good exactly anymore.
I mean, what I don't understand is what the process actually is there. I mean, presumably, the VAR officials go, right, you want to have another look at this. And what's he saying? No, you're all right.
Mm.
I mean, for me, I don't think people have talked a lot about the screens and them not being used. I understand why people say that. To me, I think that's a little bit problematic because...
use of the screens.
Yeah, because I think if you're making the decision in... like a cold environment, a TV studio that's miles away from the stadium.
Without the fans around you.
Yeah, there's no pressure. There's no benches getting in your ear or any of that. And I'm not convinced that particularly helps the referee. If it's that blatant, I think, to me, the quickest way of doing it, I think you need to look at, what, one replay, maybe two, and then the VAR says, that's a penalty. And I don't see the problem with that. I know people talk about the referee on the pitch making the decisions. People don't go to the stadium to watch the referee, and I don't really care about the referee's feelings. It has to be the correct decision. That is the reason it is there. So if it's a collaborative effort between a refereeing team, which it is anyway when it's on the pitch between a referee, his two assistants, if an assistant spotted something that a referee had missed, why is that a problem? That doesn't threaten a referee's ego. So why would this threaten a referee's ego? And why should it be about a referee's ego in the first place?
The biggest problem with VAR, I think, is the process. I think from what I understand, if there is a decision that they need to look at or a goal is scored and they need to go back and take a look at where the attacking phase of play begins from,
yes.
What the process, I believe, is that the VAR will say, tell us what you saw. So in this instance, he will have said, I think I saw a challenge in the box, but I believe he got the ball and whatever else he might have said in that occasion. And if that is partly in line with what the VAR can see, then they go, okay, you've seen it, so we're not going to interfere. If the referee on the field says, this is what I saw. I don't think he's anywhere near him. He's nowhere near him. I don't think he's caught him at all. Then the VAR can say, okay, I think we need to overrule this decision.
So that's the difference between clear and obvious error and just difference of opinion.
As far as I understand the process is that if the referee on the field description of the incident matches what the VAR can see, then they don't overrule it. And that is a problem for me.
That's a huge problem.
Because you can see something, but not quite see the contact from the defender on the attacker.
Well, I thought the whole point of it was the fact that...
to clear up mistakes.
Yeah, and the fact that there's a recognition now that football is so athletic, so 100 miles an hour, that you can't possibly expect a referee to see everything. Arguably, you should never have expected a referee and two assistants to see everything.
One of the most irritating things for me about all of Saturday's VAR decisions, because there were several, this was not the only one. There were quite a few that caused a bit of a problem. There are a few that they got right as well. There are a few offsides that they got correct. Raul Jimenez for Wolves, I think that was the correct decision. He was offside for one of the goals that he put in the back of the net. He had two disallowed on Saturday.
He did.
But I think that there was quite a few that were wrong. What irritated me was that the Watford one, the penalty, that was a bigger mistake than, I don't know if you've seen it, Andy, but in the Aston Villa Brighton game, I think Wesley impeded, don't smile at me like that. It's actually one out of our favour. Wesley impeded Matt Ryan. They scored and the goal was disallowed because of contact on the goalkeeper.
Yeah.
I actually didn't have a problem with that contact on Matt Ryan. You can see it one way or another. I think it was subjective. I wouldn't have had a problem if that goal stood because I don't think it was that bad a contact on Matt Ryan, is what I'm trying to say. Whereas then you look at and you compare the Watford one, and for me that's blatant, and the Matt Ryan one wasn't so blatant.
Yeah, I mean, it was almost like
there's no consistency, and this is what VAR's meant to be there for, to get consistent decisions correct.
I mean, you're never going to get rid of every mistake. Mm. I think that's clear. On this occasion, I mean, it was like Vertonghen clipped him twice just in case you didn't see it the first time.
Exactly.
And it's very, very hard to get your head around.
I think the most important now is to build the confidence, the trust that we lose after the terrible result against Bayern Munich, always is difficult to recover from there. But I think step by step we are going to recover our trust and our confidence and play more relaxed.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f-. So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
This show is sponsored by BetterHelp. How's your social battery right now? We're nearly at the end of the Premier League season, so I'm pretty drained. So many tense matches, and some not so tense, as well as point deductions, a battle for the title, and teams on the brink of relegation. All that suspense has me needing a well-deserved break. With the year in full swing, it can be easy to get swept up in work, social engagements, even keeping up with all this football, and we can spread ourselves too thin. But with therapy, you can learn to prioritise your time and really recharge your batteries. It's helpful for learning how to set personal boundaries and empowering you to be the best version of yourself, because you should spend your time on your own terms. So, if you're thinking of starting therapy, give BetterHelp a try. It's entirely online, designed to be convenient, flexible, and suited to your schedule. Just fill out a brief questionnaire to get matched with a licensed therapist and switch therapists at any time for no additional charge. Find your social sweet spot with BetterHelp. Visit betterhelp.com/ramble today to get 10% off your first month. That's BetterHelp, HELP.com/ramble.
You've got to remember, these players have come from Sunday morning football, playing non-league football and done very well, and they're not used to this. They've heard about it, they've read about it, they've seen it, but for them to actually be involved in it, it's just, it was terrible to see those players and the look on their face, and I felt I had to do something to protect my players.
It's Jules and Andy here on Football Ramble Daily. It's a Tuesday. We love hearing from you. Thanks to everyone who's got in touch. Jules and Andy at footballrambledaily.com. Loads of you have been in touch this week.
Yeah, and thanks to everyone who both interacted during last week's episode via the medium of Twitter and wrote after the show. We really do appreciate it. There's a really interesting one I wanted to read you here, Jules, from Andrew Anderson.
Hi, Andrew.
Who says, hi, Ramble Gang. Long-time listener, first-time emailer.
Nice.
Yeah. I thought I'd write in about the racism during the England-Bulgaria game. I'm English, but my wife is Bulgarian, and I moved to Sofia in January. My experience here is limited, but I thought I'd share it with you. Firstly, most Bulgarians I meet on a day-to-day basis are not racist. Many of my Bulgarian friends will be deeply embarrassed and disgusted by what happened, just as we English people are by the behaviour of some of our football fans. However, there are a lot of people here who don't know any better and don't see racist behaviour as a problem. It's very much a monoculture. There are very few non-white people, and so ignorant words and actions are not challenged. Attitudes and ideas that in England seem very outdated and unacceptable are normal here. For example, on the Bulgarian celebrity version of Stars in Their Eyes, the celebrities regularly wear blackface for performances. I teach occasional English classes here, and some of my students, who are well-educated, kind, friendly and open people, come out with some views on race that are very hard to comprehend. It is also true that football here is a refuge for extreme racists, as it used to be in England. If you walk around the city, you see many swastikas, almost always accompanied by the CSKA Sofia logo. When I first moved here, I wanted to go to games, but was advised against it because of this fact. It is one of the few parts of Bulgarian society where you're not made to feel welcome. Excuse me. All this is just to say that it's hard to imagine racism within football changing much here without the wider culture changing as well. When it comes to attitudes on race, Bulgaria, at least in my limited experience, feels like it is stuck where England was 30 years or more ago. And of course, England today is by no means perfect, Andrew says. So the problem is a big one, and I can't see it going away anytime soon, no matter what happens within football. You can close stadiums, ban the team, but the wider societal racism here is deeply rooted. Thanks, Andrew.
Well, it is a wider societal issue. Andrew, thank you so much for taking the time to write such a detailed email to us. And he makes really good points there, several good points throughout the email. Particularly what struck me about Andrew's email is when he mentions that he's a teacher, and some of the students he teaches, who are very well educated,
yeah,
also have these views. So this has to be about education to society and to all areas of society.
Or maybe they have those views, or maybe because it's not a daily issue in their society, it's something they just haven't thought about that much.
Mm.
Either way, it's all part of education, isn't it?
Yeah, it really is. And unfortunately, we had another incident of racism in football at the weekend. And it's really important that we talk about this. One of the reasons I wanted to discuss this, and I've got the Daily Telegraph from yesterday open in front of me here, because they did a piece on the Haringey Borough players and the manager who decided to walk off the pitch in their FA Cup fourth round qualifier on Saturday against Yeovil Town due to racism from a small section of the Yeovil fans. And
the reason we want to talk about this as well, Jules, is because you had quite an interesting angle on it when you were doing your job on Saturday.
Yeah, it's it was really tough, actually. It was one of the I'm very fortunate that I absolutely love my job and I love what I do, and I'm a big football fan, so to go to work and talk about football is the absolute dream. But you don't expect to sit there and have to report racism at a non-league football ground in an FA Cup match and have to see it unfold in front of your very eyes, and to have to deliver that news not only to everyone who was watching at home, but to the pundits who are sat on the sofa with me, and to have to change that tone from, you know, we're so upbeat on a Saturday, we love football, we're watching all the scores come in, we're excited, we're seeing all these incidents unfold, we've just been laughing about VAR being a shambles and all that kind of stuff. And then you hear this story and you're starting to see this unfold. And I knew the minute that we crossed over to Becky Ives, who was our reporter, who's also a very good friend of mine, at the ground. She said that there was, you know, at the time, the very first report, she didn't know what had happened. Of course, she's stood on the sidelines wondering what's going on. She could see that the fans behind the goal. If you haven't seen what happened, Yeovil were awarded a penalty.
Yes.
And the Yeovil fans were behind the Haringey Borough goal in the second half when the penalty was awarded. And this is when the main bulk of the racist abuse took place. And it was aimed at the Haringey Borough goalkeeper, who's from Cameroon. And she said that she could see that there was kind of, he was arguing with fans in the crowd, and she could see that they were spitting on him, and that there were bottles being, there was at least one or two bottles that had been thrown at the goalkeeper. And eventually the referee managed to calm the situation down. Yeovil took the penalty, they scored it, so they went 1-0 up. But the abuse didn't stop, and they kept taunting the goalkeeper and some of the other players. And eventually the manager, the Haringey manager, could see that his players were seriously distressed, and he decided to take them off the pitch. And they, as a group, decided they were going to leave the field. And Yeovil Town also did the same in solidarity and said, no, we're not going to stand for this either. We're all going to walk off the pitch. But as you can imagine, this kind of unfolded over the space of about 10 minutes. So the first time that we crossed over to Becky and she explained, they're about to take the penalty, but there's lots going on behind the goal and I'll let you know exactly what happens. The next time we spoke to Becky, she said, right, they've scored the penalty. Now the players seem to be walking off, but not to the centre circle to start play again. They seem to be walking off the pitch. And she said, come back to me because I'm going to try and find out what's happened here. And then the next time we went to her, she explained what I've just told you, which is that the goalkeeper had been racially abused. She spoke to him personally and he told her that they spat at him. He told her the sort of things he was hearing from the crowd. And she said he was visibly shaking and upset. And they collectively as a team decided that they weren't going to stand for it. And as this all happened, we were just, to be honest, I was in shock. And it's horrible to hear that, as we've talked about in the past, Andy, these men are going to work. This is a huge day in their working life. Yeah. They're playing for a place in the first round proper when they can play against a League One or a League Two club in the next round, potentially. It's a big financial boost for the club if they get through to the next round. Their fans are all out. It was a beautiful sunny day in North London. It was actually being played in really good spirits. And then to hear that this happened, it just kind of gave me chills. And it was really sad. And Becky, who, as I said, is a really good friend of mine, after everything happened at the game, we spoke on the phone and she just said to me, I don't think I can go home after that. She said, I feel really shaken up. So she ended up coming over to my house and we had a takeaway and just kind of talked about everything that happened. And we were both quite affected by it, actually. It was really sad.
Yeah. And it is something that's shocking. Mm. I suppose to an extent, we should be grateful that it's something that is still shocking, that it's something that's not so commonplace that we can just brush it off. But especially after the week that we had and the stuff that we talked about on the show last week, it's distressing to hear. It's a reminder that, you know, it's not something that we've completely conquered in England as well. And in a way, I think the way that those England players behaved impeccably in Bulgaria has probably given those players at Haringey Borough something to think about and the courage to go through and do that. And it's something that Darren Lewis in the Mirror particularly has written very eloquently about and spoken about very eloquently on a number of occasions since what happened last week happened. And, you know, he's been quite firm on the fact that, you know, this is what's going to change things, not fines, not stadium bans. I mean, I remember talking on a show on TalkSport with Hugh Wisencroft about this last week. And, you know, we were talking about fines, previous fines for racist behaviour, and it's always compared to Nicholas Bentner and his pants, isn't it? And the betting thing. But to me, that doesn't even mean anything. Mm. What amount of money makes it all right? There is not an amount of money that makes it all right, and there's not an amount of money, I think, that is going to fix this.
No, and Tom Loizou, the Haringey Borough manager, he did an interview with Becky after the game and he's spoken to lots of media outlets since about where he stands on everything since abandoning the game. And he actually, in the article that I've got in front of me here from the Daily Telegraph, he actually says he's not bothered about getting the match replayed.
Yeah.
What he did with his team on Saturday was more about standing up for his players and protecting them.
Yeah, and he doesn't need to be bothered about it. It's for someone else to deal with now. They did the right thing, and now it's over to the FA to see how they deal with it. And what can you be apart from hopeful that this has reached some sort of fever pitch and they're going to deal with this in the right way rather than like awarding the game to Yeovil. And I think that would have happened in the past, definitely. I think that public consciousness and public pressure is such that they just can't do that now. But I definitely think that would have happened in the past, and that would maybe happen in other environments. But, you know, this could be a huge turning point.
Obviously, Tom wasn't in there. Chairman was out as well. They're all speaking to the referees, maybe small conversations with the Yeovil manager.
Did you want to go back out and play?
No, the decision was made. And when we came off and we came into the changing room, spoke with a couple of my other teammates, and we just decided, so we're not going back out.
So, big Champions League week this week, Jules. You out and about?
I am. I feel like all we've talked about is going to the Tottenham Hotspur Stadium.
Try the pulled pork.
I'm going there. I'm going tonight. I've got to wrap up warm. I've got a feeling it's starting to get to that point, Andy, hasn't it, where it's getting
Parker
cold.
Out.
It's getting freezing in these night games. So, I'm going to wrap up warm, hopefully see Tottenham back to their best. They desperately need to win this. It's got to that point of the Champions League where we're match day three, and they face Red Star Belgrade tonight, but then they also face them away from home in match day four in a couple of weeks' time. So it's make or break.
Yeah, it's almost like a knockout, this middle bit of the group stage, isn't it? It's the bit that makes or breaks a team's campaign. There's plenty of other stuff going on. I'll be at IMG doing the UEFA.com Champions League radio show, as I always do.
Does that mean you cover all of the matches across the 2 days?
Yeah, that's right. Fortunately, I have eight eyes, so hidden under my hat. So that'll be pretty good. I love this stage where you're just across all of it, and there's something happening every minute. Ajax versus Chelsea, which I think is going to be absolutely huge as well. I'm really looking forward to that. And Ajax have still got a good team this season. They're a bit ropey at the weekend, but they still managed to win the top of the Eredivisie.
I'm looking forward to seeing Man City face Atalanta, because Atalanta are scoring for fun at the moment, aren't they?
Yeah, they're super open. And I saw their game at the weekend against Lazio when they were 3-0 up at the Olympico and ended up drawing 3-0. I think they had half an eye on this game because they made some changes in the second half that I think inadvertently relieve the pressure on Lazio. But they have like 21 shots a game.
It's madness.
On average, which is more than Juventus, more than Napoli, more than Inter, Roma, any of those. So I have quite a strong feeling that they will end up getting absolutely roasted tonight because they'll be so open. But, you know, they'll go down fighting, won't they?
By the way, that Serie A game against Lazio where it ended 3-3, Immobile, hopefully I've pronounced that right,
yes.
He scored a penalty for Lazio in the dying moments of the match to rescue a point for Lazio, and he wins my award for cringe moment of the weekend because did you see his celebration, Andy? It was
hilarious.
So he if you haven't seen it, try and find it. It's hilarious. If you're listening and you want to go and have a look at this, he scores a penalty, he goes off to celebrate, and he, in running off towards the crowd to celebrate, tries to take off his shirt to celebrate, and it gets stuck. He trips over and then gets booked because of the celebration by the referee.
So, imagine that. You don't fully get your shirt off and you still get booked.
So bad. It was my moment of the weekend, I think.
A waste of a booking, but good fun for the rest of us.
Yeah, exactly. Right, well, Champions League, it is for the next couple of days. Enjoy the football and we will see you same time, same place next week.
See you next week.
This was a Stakhanov production.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
When you make decisions for your company, you look for the no-brainers. If you have a lot of mailing to do, Stamps.com is the ultimate no-brainer. Use the Stamps.com mobile app to mail everything you need to keep your business running with up to 89% off USPS and UPS. Make the same no-brainer decision as over 1 million other businesses with Stamps.com. Use code PROGRAM for a special offer. That's Stamps.com, code PROGRAM.
I'm Kate Thornton. Join me every week on White Wine Question Time, the podcast that asks famous faces three thought-provoking questions over three glasses of wine.
It's very rare to be introduced with such a thorough introduction, and it's kind of lovely to listen to all that and go, yeah, I've had a good life, right?
You really have.
How did you find that? I can't even remember. Yeah, you do your research, Kate, man. I'll tell you that.
Do you know what? You are the only person ever, no other journalist has ever made that connection.
Wow, what a great question.
And receives some truly memorable answers.
And Tom Cruise came, and Nicole Kidman. I go to him, listen, before you go, Tom, I just want you to know, if you fancy a foursome, I'm up for it, and I know Anne-Marie doesn't mind.
When I first dated my now husband, I joined a gym for, I'm going to say, £1,000 a year, just so I could go off and have a poo.
Actually, I got heckled once in Wales, and there was a bloke at the bar on crutches, and he actually said to me, I'd rather fall over than listen to this shit, and he threw his crutches at me and fell over. Can you believe that?
I've got some cat's ashes, I don't know who they are.
You've been catfished by your own cat.
Exactly, seriously, man.
Dad, have you thought about putting in a breakfast nook? And my dad would think of that. Have you thought about getting your own fucking house?
How did you give a duck an orgasm, Craig?
It's good with them, you know. I know my way around a duck.
So, if you fancy a sit-down with the likes of Adam Hills, Tom Allen, Hannah Waddingham, Phil Tufnell, James Acaster and Ed Gamble, Daisy May Cooper, and tons more, then join me every Tuesday and Friday. Search White Wine Question Time in your podcast app to subscribe and listen now. White Wine Question Time is a Stack production.